This is Gina Marie Rodriguez, and you're listening to the Jersey Arts Podcast. Today, we're highlighting Premiere Stage's 20th season as they introduce their latest production, The Mallard, written by Vincent Delaney and directed by John Wooten. Freya and Gillian are teachers who have offended their school board and lost their jobs. Davis and Reagan are yard sale fanatics in search of a priceless antique duck decoy, the Horace Crandall Mallard. What follows is a fierce, funny, and escalating battle over a symbol that has wildly different meanings, intersecting the couples in a journey that far surpasses the quest for treasure. Now, with a synopsis like that, humor and intrigue are sure to follow. I had the chance to speak with both author Vincent Delaney and cast members Susan Ferrara and Woodrow Proctor about what this show means to them and what audiences can look forward to. Let's focus on the author's perspective first, before we meet the actors. Hello, how are you today?
Hey, it's great. Really good, thank you.
Great, I'm glad to hear it. I'm very excited to meet you and to talk to you about The Mallard. I'm intrigued by the name itself. Where did this come from? Where was the inspiration? How did a duck decoy become the focal point, or rather the goalpost for a play?
How did that happen? I'm still asking myself because it happened really quickly. I feel like I was just really intrigued with telling a story that would center on something that was kind of meaningless, like it didn't really mean anything to anybody, and yet it could be imbued with meaning, really radically different meaning for different people. So I'll give you an example. This duck decoy, it's something that my uncle, my small town uncle, would have used, would have kept it in his pickup truck, would have gone hunting, would have gone fishing, because that's kind of where I come from culturally. But these things are also prized by big time collectors, the kind of people my uncle would have called, the coastal elite. So I thought, how interesting to take an object that could cross over for the characters and maybe cross over, for the audience as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I don't know anything about that. And you said this is where you come from culturally, but what does that mean? Where do you come from?
Well, I come from a small town. I grew up in a small town. My family kind of hail from a town of 200 people. And I get teased a lot for that. But I think of that as a secret strength because that's that's the audience that I personally have to answer to. And so I have to write things that can cross over if I want my family to go and see them. That's literally how I see it. So there you go.
That makes perfect sense to me. That's, at least you know who your audience is, right? You know who you're writing for.
That's my personal audience. My professional audience, that's everybody else. But like, when I ask myself, what am I going to write and who's it going to reach? I mean, if I can't reach those people, then I just, I'm not doing my job.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I kind of want to talk to you about Premiere Stages because you've worked with them in the past and you've had multiple plays come through their new play festival. So I think it was Las Cruces, right? Had its world premiere in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then The Mallard was selected in 2024. But now this is their 20th season that you are opening. So how does it feel to be, well, I'll say the chosen one, right? Celebrating their 20th season.
I'll tell you what it feels like. It feels like coming home. I feel like playwrights are itinerant. We get what we get. You might end up in Fargo. You might end up in Florida. You just don't know. You get what you get. Particularly for me, I live in Seattle. I got to go everywhere. Coming back here, I mean, my first time working with this company with John Wooten was like 11 years ago. It's just such a collaborative environment. It's a place where you feel safe. It's a place where people try things. I feel like, he and I, we share, an aesthetic. Like we both have sort of a similar sense of taste. And I think it's just led to some, really good collaborations over the years. And again, I feel like that shared aesthetic, like the mix of funny, but also pathos, the heartache and the humor. I think that that really is kind of what they are about here. And of course, things that are topical and of the moment.
Absolutely. I'm curious to know how you would summarize, or what's your elevator pitch for somebody who is on the fence about seeing this show? How do you describe it to someone who's wondering if they should see it or not?
Okay, so it is a political play, but it's funny. It's absolutely funny, and I promise you, you will laugh. You will laugh. You will come. You will laugh. You will enjoy it. It's surprising. It's all, and we haven't talked about this yet at all. It's actually about my other profession. I teach. I've worked with elementary kids for 15 years, and without giving too much away, I wanted to write a play that would counter this vilification of my profession, just the way teachers are treated. I mean, there are districts all around this country where you can find yourself suspended or have or losing your job if you've read the wrong book. And I'm not exaggerating. Look it up. It absolutely is happening. So I wanted to push back against that. I wanted to show, teachers how they really are. I mean, they're heroes, in my opinion. Of course,
I
I'm one of
agree.
them. Thank you. But I mean, and I think this is a question you had for me as well. Why keep it funny? Because you'll lose half your audience if you don't. And I think the way to avoid being polemical, the way to like really make a point, is to do it through humor. It's my opinion.
Absolutely. I do agree with that, but obviously artists have their different ways of approaching things, and a lot of people do like to focus on the heavy, right? They like to focus on the drama of it all. I happen to be a comedy fan, so I love that that's the vehicle you've chosen. But yeah, I do understand, unfortunately, that teachers and education right now in this country are under attack, have been under attack for a while. So art is political, right? All art is political in one direction or another. That's just how it works. This is how we talk to one another.
So I'll just tell you, I mean, the setup of this play, it sounds really grim. It's two teachers. They've been fired. They've lost their jobs for being too open about themselves, and they are moving. They're leaving. That does not sound like a comedy, but it is a comedy. I mean, in my opinion.
Well, I think that's kind of where humor steps in when you're at your lowest, because other people, oh, it's I'm gonna butcher it, but there is a quote. I think it's maybe Mel Brooks. It's like, comedy is when I cut my finger, and no, tragedy is when I cut my finger, and comedy is when you fall in a sewer grate and die, or something. I'm butchering the quote, but I feel exactly where you're coming from. It sounds like it might be grim, but it's a great time to poke fun at what's actually happening around us.
I th think there is a little, I mean, to really dig deep, I think there is something that happens to you when you laugh, at a situation on stage, and you invariably, first of all, you cannot help but see yourself in that situation. That's probably why you're laughing. But it leaves you with a little bit of extra identification with the character. And I think more so than, I mean, it's obvious, right? If a character's on stage telling you how you should think about something, yeah, that's great if you already agree with it. But if you're in that 51% of America or 49% of America that don't agree with that, that's not going to work. That's absolutely, and it's not going to bring the other audience into the theater. So, yeah, humor.
Absolutely. I mean, who wants to be preached to, right? If you want a sermon, there are places where you can find
Yeah,
that.
that's
But
right.
it's the theater. You should be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And I like that. Did you tell me what you taught?
No, but I'll give it up. I teach elementary physical education, so I'm your PE teacher. If you ever need a workout, I'm the guy.
That's fantastic. I mean, I always need somebody to teach me how to work out. I can barely do a crunch correctly, so
Okay, I'm your guy for that. I'll take care of that.
great, thank you. Virtually, we can have a session. But no, thank you for all that you do as a teacher. Thank you to all of your colleagues and everyone in the profession, because I do think it's important to shout out the fact that teachers are heroes, and the work that is done in our school systems is incredibly important, as is the work that you're doing outside of that in the theater.
Thank you.
My last question for you is, and some people hate this question, but I'm going to ask anyway, what is it that you hope audiences will take away from the show, if you have that hope?
Well, so for this play, I guess I would say it just really goes back to the whole thing about being a teacher and what teachers are doing, and how they are not integrated into their communities in a way that I think is healthy. That's the thing for me. And that's not true everywhere, but that is what this story is about. And how we need to do a better job. And maybe not just really for a particular profession, but I mean, don't you feel like our society has been frayed down, has been kind of torn apart, like we're being pitted against each other? I mean, this play goes right at that, right? Left, right, Republican, Democratic. That's the problem, right? That is the problem. It's that friction right now. And I mean, I don't know. I guess I hope that people will come out of this thinking in a really tiny way about that. I hope.
And now we'll take a moment to switch gears and see what cast members Susan Ferrara and Woodrow Proctor have to say about the Mallard. I'd love to hear a little bit about your characters, who you're playing, and who they are. Tell me about them.
So I play Freya, and I am a teacher in a small town, and I have been teaching for a lot of years, and I love my students, and I'm incredibly stubborn, and also, gosh, it's such a great question because she's a myriad of things to me. I am protective of the people I love and very much interested in living my life as fully myself. And I think I'll stop there because I was about to say a thing and I was like, don't say the thing and it's going to be a thing. So I'm going to stop.
Okay. So we're saving our audience from spoilers. I like it. Woodrow, we'll keep that in mind as you go.
Yes.
Yes. Don't want to spoil too much.
No. Look in the line.
I'm playing a character named Davis. I guess one thing that I would say, you know, in the interest of not spoiling too much, but sort of like lending a potential audience member something interesting to hold on to about these characters, is the thing that brings these characters together is that they all have a different but arguably equally strong reason to be chasing this item, the Mallard.
Yes, the Mallard.
Davis comes at it from, I guess, the perspective of being like, he what he wants is the thrill of the hunt, right? He's an antique collector, and he's there with his wife, Reagan. And Davis and Reagan differ somewhat in the way that they approach antique collecting and their sort of goals there. But I actually really relate to my character Davis because he just loves the activity of it and finding the joy in the sort of chase of these random kind of, you know, arguably meaningless little things, right? And really, I think what makes kind of seeing these different characters collide in the show interesting is that they're all chasing the same thing, but they all have completely different reasons for it. And over the course of the show, they end up kind of learning about each other's reasons for chasing. And that's kind of where the, you know, character growth comes in.
Perfectly said, with no spoilers. Well done, you.
Boom, no spoilers.
Success. You touched on my next question a little bit. I wanted to ask you, as actors, how do you connect to your characters? And is there a certain aspect of them that you most enjoy playing? And I know that, Woodrow, you said that you relate to your character, but if you can expand on that a little bit.
Yeah. So what I was saying about Davis and that he's just there for the thrill of the hunt, right? It's not, I guess Davis is living it's not about the destination. It's about the journey we have along the way, right? But I think in like a real sense of kind of why he's there, like what brings him to this kind of weird lifestyle with his wife, is that he just he loves being on the road with his wife and just the excitement of potentially finding one of these things. I'm not an antique collector, but I really relate to that feeling of finding joy and excitement in things that aren't sort of objectively, you know, the coolest, hottest thing on the block, right? You know, I love like road trips and like the sort of silly stuff you see in the middle of nowhere on the side of the road. And also one of my favorite things is, you know, going to a new place I've never been before and then just choosing a direction and then just walking for as long as I can walk. Because I find you just end up seeing stuff and you just end up getting the sort of personality of the area. And I think that I see an element of myself and the way that I try and find things to get excited about in the way that Davis, you know, has this enthusiasm for antique hunting. Susie, do you want to talk about your character?
Yeah, although I could listen to you all day. I think and I do. I love it. I think that the thing that I love most about Freya is her sense of purpose. You know, the fact that she so identifies herself as somebody who can be of service to her students, and they're babies. They're little peanuts, and the way in which she cares for them and nurtures them, and it is her focus. It is her purpose. It's why she's there. She is there to help these young students in this small town become the adults that she'll continue to know and continue to see, and continue to watch grow. And I think that what I love most about her is the surprise in her, because I don't think you would, upon meeting her for the first time, imagine that she is a teacher who makes a difference, that she is someone who is so in tune with why she is where she is and how important it is to her to be there, to be in front of a classroom and nurture these young minds and encourage these young minds and watch them grow and develop. And I think that, you know, coming from, you know, a long line of teachers, so many of my family are teachers and coal miners. It's a nice mix. I think I really, you know, through Freya, I've come to appreciate my family even more. Because if you think about, and if I think about, you know, who was your favorite teacher growing up? I think everybody who gets asked that question has an answer. For me, it's Mrs. Robertson, right? She was our history teacher. So it makes me think about that lineage, that the way in which, you know, I was a third grader once, and what that was like to be in that room with somebody who used colored chalk on the chalkboard, and how fancy that was and how fun it was. And I don't know, just how delightful. So for me, purpose, I think, is what I enjoy most about Freya and what connects me to her. Her world ultimately is really small and becomes a little larger. And I think that's a beautiful thing. It's kind of jumping off, Woodrow, what you're saying about, you know, the growth that we all go through, you know, as the story progresses, which is a fun thing to play.
I love that so much. And I'm glad that you brought it up. If I have to, I will shout out my favorite teachers as well, because three came to mind as you were talking. Mrs. Giordano, Mrs. Placco, and Mrs. Brown. I had talked about this with Vincent a little bit too, about, you know, just how important teachers are to our society, but it also ties into the political nature of the piece. And I'm wondering, as actors, do you have to consider the political nature of a piece when you're preparing for a role, or does that knowledge influence you in any way, or do you actively try to set that aside when you're prepping?
Boy, that's such a great question. I'm going to say that I think it's in the ether, but I think as we sit down and we understand what story we're trying to tell, I think it's natural to think about who I am, what I want, and what my challenges are, and how my story as this particular character fits into the larger story. So while politics are always important and are ever present, really it's the relationships, it's the way in which we move in the world, it's what we want and what we're afraid of. I mean, it's basic humanity. Why we are in the rooms we are and why we're interacting with the people we're interacting with.
Yeah. I think there's this interesting, I guess you could say, like, an interesting balance that sometimes comes up, where as an actor, there are really only certain things that you can play. And by what you can play, I mean, you're on stage, you're in the scene, and that's what you are, what your character is expressing and what the audience is seeing of you, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to have this understanding that what you can play is only part of the story, right? So although I wouldn't say that, you know, normally, or in this show in particular, you go on stage and you play like advocacy or politics in some way. You have to have this understanding that just in terms of the subject matter, you are addressing it just by it being present, right? Mm-hmm. It affecting these people's lives. Mm-hmm. So I guess my specific answer to the question is that it's not really that it has a direct impact on your performance. It's not that it we are, you know, acting politics, mm-hmm. but it's that amidst these characters, you know, and their emotions and their actions and their desires, which is what we play, we just have to have an understanding that there is a world that they live in and they are connected to those political themes. Yeah, so it's kind of like it's a nuanced relationship.
I think both of you explained that extremely well. So thank you. I don't really know what I was expecting from that question, but I'm so glad that I asked it because you gave me really brilliant answers. Thank you for that. But it also, it touches on the direction of the show too, because obviously you are not acting in a vacuum. You have a director who is working with you on this show, and that director happens to be John Wooten, who is also the producing artistic director of Premier Stages. And I'm curious, what has it been like working with John as your director, and what has it been like working at Premier?
Well, it's been great. Easy one-word answer. Great.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I would say one thing that's been really interesting for me is that I'm sort of new to the new play experience. Done a lot of work on, you know, Shakespeare, not a new play. That stuff's been around for a long time. So I've been able to observe some really interesting stuff with the way that John as a director interfaces with, you know, working on a new play, because he's an expert at it. That's what Premier Stages specializes in. And so we had Vince, the author there. And I thought that the two of them, as director and author, understood their sort of boundaries of control within the experience in a really interesting way. Because as an author, yes, you wrote the play, but you're not the director. So you don't, you know, necessarily guide the actors on the pacing of this scene or the way that it's going to be laid out or where you should stand or whatever. And as the director, although you're controlling, you know, that kind of stuff and building this arc for the actors to sort of slot into, you're not the author, right? You can't then go change lines willy-nilly and stuff. And it was interesting to watch them, like, as they would come up with, you know, Vince would come up with an idea of maybe how the scene could be staged. He would run it by John, like, hey, I know that this isn't my place, but I saw it this way. And then in the same way, in the other direction, John would consider a line and be like, you know, if we just had like one little change here, that might tell the story in a more clear way. And then they would run it by Vince, and Vince would think it over. You know, so it's interesting having this like new character in the room that I have not had in my previous rehearsal experiences, where the author is there. We can like ask him what he intended. Susie, do you want to touch on this too?
Everything that you just said, Woodrow, times 100. And then, you know, also too, it's that there's something so joyful about being in a room where everybody's new to the story. Nobody knows really what it's going to look like on stage. Nobody has seen a previous performance. And I think that's the beauty and the fun and the joy of working on something that is brand new. And I think what I love most about working with John, with Vincent, and with this amazing group of people, including Woodrow, who, God help me if I, please, 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 please don't let me laugh while he's on stage. It's very hard to keep a straight face. He's amazing. But I think what I love really is that it's collaborative. And I know a lot of people say that, but I actually do come from the development of new work, both as a playwright and as an actor. And I come from Chicago, where a lot of new stuff is like, new plays come from everywhere, but my most of my training post-college was, here's a new play, how do we make it work, et cetera, et cetera. And what John does so beautifully is he really listens. You know, there's such a huge amount of respect for everybody in the room, and it's a very kind room and a very open room, and there's time for conversation, and there's also time for ideas and imagination. So it feels like we all have a hand. We're all in service to both the vision of the director and the ideas and the story of the playwright. And that is a real unique, that's a unique situation to be in. So, you know, if anybody's listening, everybody, please, you know, shout out to Premier Stages because it's a beautiful place to create new work.
I'm so glad to hear that. And what is it that you hope audiences will take away from this show?
Oh gosh, I'm just going to jump in and say, remember your teachers. Remember the teachers that made a difference in your life. Maybe if they're still with us, write them a note and thank them. And also bring a plate of cookies to your neighbors if your neighbors look like any one of the five people you meet on stage.
It's an interesting question because you don't want to send someone into a play with like an assignment on like you got to learn like this is a piece that you got to take in and you're gonna be different afterwards, you know? That's a sort of hope that we have. Like that's ultimately kind of like, you know, the dream. If you're making a piece of theater that someone comes in and they do take something from it, and then they'll remember it. I totally agree with the things that Susie was saying about like there are like really nice ideas in this show that I do think if we were all able to internalize, you know, it might help us. At the beginning of the show, there are some kind of assumptions that the characters make about each other, and over the course of the show, those assumptions break down. And so one thing that I guess I would love for people to just think about maybe, or I don't know, have some sort of realization on is that it's easy, right? It's easy when people don't live where you live or they behave differently or some aspect of some new place you're in is scary to you. It's easy to kind of dismiss it as like, oh, this is just something weird that I don't understand, and it's a danger to me, right? But when you get to know people, generally, like you'll find the good in them, right? So I think that's one idea that I'm trying to kind of hold on to is that like by the end of it, I think they do understand each other more. And I think that with time, with connection, with exposure, we can all kind of understand each other more.
The only other thing I want to add too is that we hope people enjoy it. We hope people have a laugh and maybe have a moment where they're like, oh, that was sweet, whatever. But, you know, at the risk of sounding corny, really our job is to entertain people. So we hope they walk out with a better, I don't know, with a little bit of lightness as opposed to whatever they walked into. We hope they walk out with a little bit of lightness.
It's a fun show.
It's fun. It's a fun show. So fun is what we want them to walk out with. A sense of fun.
If you're looking for a show that will make you laugh and maybe learn a thing or two, The Mallard runs July 17th through August 3rd at Premier Stages at Kane University in Union. And in honor of Premier Stage's 20th season, opening night on July 18th will feature a pre-show cocktail party with live music and a 7:30 performance of The Mallard to be followed by a 9 p.m. champagne and dessert reception. For tickets and more information, be sure to visit premierstagesatkane.com. If you liked this episode, be sure to review, subscribe, and tell your friends. A transcript of this podcast, links relevant to the story, and more about the arts in New Jersey can be found at jerseyarts.com. The Jersey Arts Podcast is presented by Art Pride New Jersey, advancing a state of creativity since 1986. The show was co-founded by and currently supported by funds from the New Jersey State Council on the Arts. This episode was hosted, edited, and produced by me, Gina Marie Rodriguez. Executive producers are Jim Atkinson and Isaac Cernadiaz. And my thanks, of course, to Vincent Delaney, Susan Ferrara, and Woodrow Proctor for speaking with me today. I'm Gina Marie Rodriguez for the Jersey Arts Podcast. Thanks for listening.